This episode of The Line is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek.fm at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
Hi, I'm Honalee Culpepper, director of Star Trek Discovery and Star Trek Picard, and you are listening to Trek FM.
Welcome to The Line, Trek FM's podcast dedicated to Star Trek Picard. I'm Justin Ozer. Brandon Shamatala is off today celebrating his birthday, but we do have my co-host, the amazing Chrissy DeClercq-Zalagi. Chrissy, how are you doing today?
I am doing very well, and I hope you're doing well as well. That was a lot of wells, but that's all right.
Yeah, I am doing well. So as we record this, it's 6 days until we're going to see the first episode of Picard.
Yay!
But some people have already seen it at some premieres that have happened, and that's going to be one of the focuses of the show because we really have a special episode for you today. So recently there were two Star Trek Picard premieres, one in LA and one in London. Lucky for us, Duncan Barrett, who's the host of Trek FM's Primitive Culture and a friend of the show, was at the London premiere. And he was able to get access to get some roundtable interviews with many of the actors in Picard and all of the co-creators of the show. And he also had a discussion with some friends both before and after they saw the first episode at the premiere. So before I get your reaction, Chrissy, let me just list out everybody that Duncan got interviews with.
All right.
So he did get one with Sir Patrick Stewart and Jeri Ryan, which is amazing. Yay. Also, Jonathan Del Arco, who plays Hugh, Issa Briones, who plays Dodge, Harry Treadaway, who plays Narek, Michelle Hurd, who plays Raffi Musiker, Evan Evagora, who plays Elnor, and all of the show co-creators, Michael Chabon, Alex Kurtzman, Kirsten Beyer, and Akiva Goldsman. So I think it's pretty amazing he was able to get all of those interviews and get the access that he needed, because that's a large cross-section of the cast and the co-creators. What do you think?
Oh, yeah, of course. I'm incredibly impressed, and I'm also terribly jealous.
Yeah, because now, so at the London screening, so he saw the first episode, also along with some friends. So included in this episode, besides the interviews, there's some really great discussions that Duncan had both before and after the screening. And that was with Clara Cook, who used to co-host Primitive Culture with Duncan, Lee Hutchison, who used to co-host Earl Grey, who's now on the Nerd Party Network, Carlos Miranda of TrekNews.net, and superfan Rebecca Lockley for a little appearance there. So he got a nice group of people to talk about this, and we're basically going to kind of intersperse those. So we'll start with the interviews, and then it'll go to the pre-screen discussion, more interviews. So we just wanted to break it up a little bit and have all that content. So yeah, it's exciting to have all this for our listeners to hear, right?
Very much so. Very much so.
Yeah. It's incredibly exciting. So without further ado, we will start right here with the interview that Duncan Barrett got with Sir Patrick Stewart and Jeri Ryan.
We've got Sir Patrick Stewart and Jeri Ryan for you. We take two.
Hello.
Seats.
Hello.
Hi. Nice to see you. And you.
Thank you for coming.
Hi.
Is that mine?
Hi. Yes. Yeah. Hello again, my dear.
Oh. Hi.
Hey, darling.
Hello.
I slept.
You slept?
I slept for about 40 minutes.
I went to Picard Dilly Circle. It's amazing.
Darn.
It's amazing. Have you guys seen it?
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, incredible.
So fun.
I wonder if I...
So I was down there being a big old nerd and taking pictures and videos and all the stuff, and on the way out, this lady that works there goes,
it's Piccadilly Circus.
There's a picture of you downstairs. I said, was there? I didn't notice.
Did you have to buy
it's amazing.
Tickets.
Yeah. You know what? Kristen, I think, went and bought one, and then she's like, what am I doing? And she talked to somebody, and they let us all in and let us back out.
Oh.
But yes, in theory, to get there, you have to get the ticket.
Maybe we
it's
can
worth
do
it. You need
when
to see
we leave
it.
Here, we can just
you really need to
go by there. And it's the Piccadilly Circus station.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But you got to go all the way down because it's the whole way down. There's like, oh my God, there's more stuff. And there's more stuff. And then there's more. And then there's the giant posters on the, like at the train. It's cool. Super cool. Anyway, hi.
Bishop, not your concern. At what point did you decide to return to this universe?
About a month into our conversations, I assume you ask that because you know that for many years, any suggestion that I might revive it in different formats and contexts, I passed on immediately, straight away, without hesitation. Not because I wasn't proud of what we did on Next Generation. I loved all the people that I worked with very, very much. But I thought I had said and done everything that could be said and done about Jean-Luc and the Enterprise and his relationship with the crew and so forth. But when I found myself sitting in front of Akiva and Alex and Kirsten and James Duff, they at once began to talk about the new series in a way that was unexpected. And all I did was listen. And then I made them a long speech as to why I was going to turn down their offer. That was all, which I think took them a little by surprise. But then they talked some more, and they went into more detail about the storyline. And when it was over, I asked my agent if he would contact them and have them put in writing all the things they'd said. Mm. And 2 days later, I got 35 pages of pitch. And it was undeniably interesting. And it was not going to be, I think, what either of us had experienced previously. A different world, which entirely appealed to me because the world is different in the last 19 years. Both our countries. You're not Canadian, are you?
No.
You're American. Somebody is Canadian in our group, but who is it? Is it? Anyway, it doesn't matter. I thought that they were addressing not only a science fiction story, but they were addressing the world at the condition that we're in at the moment, because it's bad. It's really bad. And I'm all for that. I've always been very active. And so if we can give little nudges to what we all believe about what's going on.
So it's also about the present.
Exactly. Mm. Subtly, gently, we're not hammering anything home. Not at all. But you know, the Federation is not the Federation that it was in our day, or Starfleet is certainly not the Starfleet of old. Mm-hmm. Things have changed, and it's not good either. So,
but Star Trek has always done that, too. Star Trek has always reflected society for its time. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of continuing in a fine tradition, I think.
That's true. But Gene wasn't very enthusiastic about that aspect of it, because I know
really
we tried to nudge,
because the original series, that's how he created it, so he changed, he was,
oh really,
well I mean the black and white
yes.
Japanese right after World War II and a Russian in the middle of the Cold War,
yes,
all on the bridge,
yeah,
that one was much more in your face, making a statement. And yeah, I think the original series, I think it was much more subtle later,
yes, I think it was on other issues rather than race and gender and so forth that he wasn't really comfortable, because when he died, may he rest in peace, and Rick Berman took over, we injected a little more into the series than we had done before.
Interesting. We got to talk more about this stuff. I'm not this person.
No, you see what you do. You bring along these questions and we learn about each other.
Can I ask on a more sort of personal level? I mean, Star Trek's always had the kind of socio-political side. Both of you played characters that I think really inspired people personally. I mean, I grew up with Next Gen I got into Star Trek around the time my father walked out of my family. Mm. And Picard in particular was a real role model for me, a real kind of father figure. And I'm kind of curious, coming back 30 odd years later, what sort of role model is he going to be as a kind of grandfather to my son? You know, is it the same old Picard? Mm. Is he still going to play that role?
First of all, I'm very touched by your story. And it's one that I have heard many times, both from young people who were growing up and the most affecting communication I ever had was from a police sergeant in the Las Vegas police force, who wrote me quite a long letter about his life as a policeman and how much he loved the job, and he had always wanted to be in the police. But he said, there are days when I come home when what I've seen and heard and witnessed is so unpleasant. I feel at times close to despair. And when I feel that, I go to my shelf and I take down it was a VCR in those days, a tape of Next Generation. Aww. And my hope returns. This was lovely. So it's this guy, he's, when we first meet him, he is in poor shape. But even over the space of the first episode, that undergoes a change because of his encounter with Issa Briones, who plays Daj. There's gradually, as the story goes on, and he is impacted by the story, we see more of the spirited believer in the benefits that can come from being socially conscious and aware of other people and other situations and so forth.
Thank you.
And with you, Jerry, was there anything when you came back to Seven of Nine that you were excited to explore that you hadn't gotten to do over the course of Voyager?
Well, it's funny because, as Patrick said, I thought that her story was done. Mm-hmm. The same way. I thought we'd done it. The interesting part of her, for me, was her exploration of becoming human again. And we did that. And that was... So I hadn't really given it a whole lot of thought. And then when the idea was first broached with me 2 years ago, once they started explaining what they saw as what she's like now in the last 20 years, I was very intrigued. I mean, it was too interesting to pass up because she's been through a lot. She's seen a lot of really dark, bad stuff over the last 20 years. Mm-hmm. So she's kind of hardened. She's a bit more cynical. She's been working with a sort of independent peacekeeping or law and order group called the Fenris Rangers. I think I'm allowed to talk about that. Trying to keep some semblance of order in the galaxy, which has gone to hell in a handbasket, and for which she kind of holds Starfleet and the Federation very much responsible, and sort of Picard as an extension of that, I think.
Mm. When you were both sort of coming back to reprise your roles, did you go back and sort of revisit the old episodes to sort of get back into the frame of mind?
No, because I think it's probably your experience as well. I don't think we ever really leave it because we've been going to conventions and talking with fans about these same characters and these same stories for the last 20 years. Mm-hmm. So I think for the most part, that's always still pretty fresh in our minds. So it was more figuring out how she would change and how she would be physically now, where her voice is and things like that in the ensuing 20 years.
Picard and Patrick became very close friends. And there was a point, certainly I think by halfway through the second season of Next Generation, that I began to realize that I didn't quite know where Patrick left off and Jean-Luc began, that we had merged. And I was comfortable with that because I didn't have to sit and brood over who the man was and what he'd had for breakfast in order to to play a scene on the Enterprise. And what I liked about the proposal that Alex and the team made was that the world was in the world that we had inhabited, the world of the Federation had changed and was no longer the secure, trustworthy, reliable place that it had been, that there were other interests and so forth. And that was one of the major things that convinced me that I should look seriously at reviving this. And I'm very glad that I did, because we have an extraordinary team, haven't we? I mean, I don't know when actors... Well, I'm a co-executive producer, and to be sitting in the writer's room with Akiva Goldsman and Michael Chabon is an extraordinary experience. Brilliant people, and to hear the ideas flash backwards and forwards and then be abandoned and another one take its place was thrilling.
Is this a series about trust? Who can you trust nowadays? Is that one of the themes?
There are individuals who I believe in. For instance, I believe in David Miliband, who is now running the International Rescue Committee from New York and ought really to be running the UK. But you know what happened there. There are some of the contenders for the American presidency whom I have great respect for, though I also have profound anxiety that it's not going to turn out the way I would like it to turn out.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
We are here in Leicester Square in the heart of London, just across from the white carpet for the Star Trek Picard European premiere. I'm here with Clara Cook and Carlos Miranda. How are you two?
Great. Are you kidding? This is amazing.
I'm really good, thank you.
This is absolutely an exciting evening. This is the premiere of the first episode of Star Trek Picard. I know the Americans got to see the first three episodes. I think maybe we just get the one, but we're certainly really looking forward to it. Clara, what are you expecting to see in this show?
I'm expecting it to be quite different than other Star Trek shows. I'm expecting it to be, I would say, maybe slightly more dystopian, but I'm really looking forward to the costumes. I'm looking forward to the music. I'm really excited about the theme music. I really want to know what that's like. But I'm also expecting great acting, because they've got a stellar cast lined up.
I just hope there is theme music, because when Discovery premiered, we got a glimpse at the opening titles, I think, or at least the music. Yeah. Star Trek Picard, I suppose we have seen that one sheet, so there's clearly something written, but no one has mentioned it. No one's talked about this. All the people who've seen the show, and I know we're going to be embargoed. We're not going to be supposed to be talking about what we see later tonight anyway. But I don't know. I hope it's not a kind of minimal... You know, there are shows these days that they don't really have a theme. They just have a little bit of tinkly and that's it.
I think we're definitely going to get a theme, but I don't think it's going to be this like rousing, like Star Trek amazing theme. I think it's going to be... I mean, this is a character... They keep talking about this show as a character study, right? So I think this is going to be a slow burn. I think this is going to be like quick... not quick, but I think it's going to be a slow burn. And I think the either the intro will be really short, or it's going to be something that is very minimal in terms of music, I think, in terms of an intro. But I'm excited. I think the intro... I'm like dying to see the intro. Because, as you said, they released the disco one so early. So the fact that they haven't released one yet, I'm curious to see what they do.
Sort of chamber piece. And maybe that's kind of fitting in with the mood of the show itself. I mean, it's kind of hard to get a sense of it from the trailers we've seen. Obviously, we know, you know, Picard's not going to spend the whole time out on his vineyard. But I guess this first episode, we're going to have an element of that kind of life on the vineyard. We've heard some clips going out on the radio this week, Picard sounding pretty desolate, pretty kind of depressed. There was one line I was quite taken aback by, where he had a line something like, you know, I didn't come here to retire, I came here to wait to die. And I was thinking, this is not the John Luke that we've been, you know, waiting to see again.
But I mean, isn't that awesome? I think I love the fact that it's not like a direct sequel in terms of tone and style to Next Generation. We live in a completely different time than 1987.
Yeah.
And I think the fact that Trek is we're getting the show and it's here and it's all about kind of commenting on the here and now, and kind of living to those ideals. I just those ideals of like Star Trek's past. I think it's really really exciting, and so I'm here for it.
So what are we looking forward to? A Vulcan exit, a Teller exit, something along these lines coming up in the show.
I mean, that would be a good twist, you know, and I think actually it kind of fits. If it starts out dark, it just means that they can fight for something better. And then there's a really nice story about people striving for something better, and I think that's actually kind of exciting.
Yeah, it certainly seems to me from some of the kind of advanced information that we've seen that there's an element of Picard feeling betrayed by Starfleet. I mean, we've had that before in the movies, in a sense, being betrayed certainly by individual bad admirals, by the Federation Council. The sense that I've got from the stuff we've seen is that this is going to open with Picard in a dark place because he's turned his back on Starfleet. He feels they, you know, maybe they feel he's betrayed them, but he feels absolutely that they've betrayed him, that they've gone against their principles. And I think from what I was reading recently, that the characters of Seven of Nine and Hugh are actually maybe embroiled in a kind of fight back against Starfleet, in a sense, for some kind of controversial decision. So I suppose we're looking into definitely a kind of greyer, almost this is kind of a post-DS9 Star Trek rather than a post-next-gen Star Trek.
Yeah, I think I love it when Star Trek is like that. I really think that when Star Trek is at its core, it's holding on to those ideals, but everything around it has kind of turned its back and we have to like fight our way through. I mean, my favorite Picard is like Drumhead Picard, right? I like that's the Picard when he's standing up for what's right, no matter whether it's against a Romulan, a Klingon, or a Federation officer. So I think this is going to be fantastic.
So that was quite an exciting experience. We were walking the white carpet surrounded by onlookers. I don't know whether these are the people who maybe have been waiting all day hoping to nab a ticket to this premiere. And a handful of them, I think, have been rewarded for their efforts and their devotion by... they have been handing out a number of tickets today to people who've been waiting all day to see them. But quite a crowd lining the white carpet. A few Starfleet uniforms in attendance. Quite a lot of rather serious... outfits instead. I mean, the dress code for this event was smart, which I don't know about you, Clara. I still had to dig out a suit jacket from my cellar to make sure that I was kind of up to that. They've been quite definite. They don't really want, I think, cosplay and so on inside the theatre. They want this to be a kind of classy event. But nonetheless, a number of fans kind of putting in an appearance and a little bit of cosplay going on outside, kind of adding to the general vibe.
The aesthetic of this show seems to be very much... monochrome colours, actually, I have to say. We haven't seen many like bright, colourful Starfleet uniforms, so I think it's going to be a real change in terms of the costume design and like the graphics and everything. I mean, you know from the poster, you know, he's dressed in quite casual work clothes, and then here, even here, like the decor is all very black and white, and it's quite stylish, really.
I've seen people describing it as Goth Trek, almost, because when you see those posters on the Underground today, they're everywhere around Piccadilly Circus, around Leicester Square. It's true. I mean, I think the costumes are absolutely beautiful for this show, particularly Seven of Nine. I mean, Seven of Nine, for once, not in a kind of cat suit that means that Jerry Ryan can't breathe, but actually in a pretty amazing outfit. Patrick Stewart's outfits are fantastic. Amazing kind of long coats, amazing kind of these sort of knitted jumpers and everything. I mean... I'm not doing them justice. I'm not really the fashion expert that we need here, but amazing costume design for the show. And I think Star Trek, in a way, has always slightly struggled with civilian clothing. I mean, you know, we've obviously had a lot of effort gone into the Starfleet uniforms. Civilian clothing, you know, when you beam down to a planet, often has been a bit of a letdown. This is going to be the show, I think, that turns all that around.
Yeah, I mean, also the money behind this, it really, you just see it on the screen. After a success of Disco, they're really going for it this way. And I think that this is big budget Star Trek on the quote-unquote small screen. Like we've never seen it before. We've gotten a taste of it especially with the budget and the money spent on the effects on Disco. But I really feel like this with Patrick Stewart, this is going to be like the crown jewel of Star Trek for a little while, and I'm excited for it.
It's definitely a step up. I mean, if you think about Discovery and the kind of publicity we saw surrounding that, yes, they were promoting that show, and you know it's been a popular show, and it is now in the UK even screening on terrestrial TV, I think, finally. But this definitely feels like a major step up, really, the Picard show. I mean, today in London, you know, you can't walk around central London without being bombarded with Picard imagery. And in LA as well.
Piccadilly Circus, man.
Exactly. Piccadilly Circus. Did you come through Piccadilly Circus, Carlos?
I came especially to go through Piccadilly Circus. And the fact is, I'm beating myself up for not getting video or at least a sound recording, because they changed the entire station is Star Trek themed, and the announcer is now Patrick Stewart for the day. So, like, all the announcements for all the tubes, it's Captain Picard, and they throw little jokes in there about, like, if you're waiting for your transport rather than the tube. It's just amazing. The amount of money that Amazon, CBS are spending on this is unlike anything I've ever seen.
And it's got to be a sign of confidence. I mean, they've recommissioned this show before it's even, not only is it not aired, but, you know, I think before even the US premiere, they'd recommissioned it for a second season. There's clearly a lot of confidence that they've got something right with this one. I mean, not to say, you know, that they necessarily got anything wrong with Discovery, but Discovery had a lot of teething problems. They had a lot of changes of personnel. And Picard is having a big change of personnel. They're having a new showrunner for season two for very good reasons. But it sort of feels like they seem pretty confident they've really nailed it this time.
Yeah, and I also think Disco in many ways, and I love Disco, and I think Disco is wonderful, but Disco was new, a new cast, new everything. This is a return to, you know, the golden age of Star Trek, and so I think it's Golden Age 2.0, so it's I'm here for it.
And you pointed out, Carlos, I hadn't really made this connection, but tomorrow is 25 years to the day since Caretaker premiered, and, you know, I don't know about you two, but for me, I mean, I remember the premiere of Emissary. I think I was just starting to get into Star Trek then, but Caretaker is the one that I really remember. That's the one I was really excited about, this new series. I'd heard a lot about it, so this whole experience, it does really kind of take me back. You know, 25 years ago, I was sitting in my school classroom because the teacher had brought in a tape he'd managed to record of Caretaker airing the night before and played it, put over the projector up on the whiteboard, and we all sat entranced watching as this ship was transported to the Delta Quadrant, and it felt like nothing we'd ever seen before in Star Trek. Now, 25 years later, you know, we're all grown up, and here we are again in the same, you know, almost the same situation. Something new, something exciting, something that we really can't wait for. And yet at the heart of it, Captain Picard is back. I mean, it's almost unbelievable, isn't it?
Yeah, it feels very surreal. I think that a lot of us spent our youth watching Next Generation, you know, on, and in the UK it was aired on BBC Two. I remember it was always on a Wednesday on BBC Two. And I remember sitting, you know, in my home, and to be here now, it feels quite surreal. In the centre of London at a big premiere with all this, you know, publicity and press and sort of fanfare, it's quite a juxtaposition between the two, you know, like growing up with this thing that you loved and now suddenly it's become much more of a phenomenon. I mean, Star Trek's always been a phenomenon, you know, but if you think about it now, it feels more mainstream even, actually, I think, than it used to be.
Absolutely. I mean, I think when we were growing up, you know, I was in the biology school teacher's classroom and there were like maybe 10 or 15 of us out of the whole school who wanted to watch the new Star Trek. It was something that, you know, if you weren't being bullied for, you were at least being, you know, you were getting the odd raised eyebrow and not a Vulcan raised eyebrow necessarily for being passionately into it. These days it feels very different. It feels like Star Trek has entered the mainstream. You know, Patrick Stewart is here back in London, back in England, and he's being absolutely feted and celebrated in a way that, you know, almost hasn't been seen before. It definitely feels like a step up for the franchise.
Oh, 100%. I mean, this is Leicester Square in London, you know, like the equivalent of like Times Square in New York in many ways, and it's become so mainstream. The fact that Piccadilly Circus has to be one of the busiest tube stations, subway stations in the world, for it to be completely transformed, it's so mainstream. Walking in, I saw, I mean, literally hundreds of people taking pictures, taking selfies all over the tube. This is a mainstream pop cultural event, which 25 years ago, I mean, Caretaker was a big deal. It was a brand new show. Obviously, it opened, you know, it was the first big show of the new UPN network. There was a lot of fanfare, but it still felt TV, small. It was niche. It was, you know, this is not. I mean, look at this. This is totally mainstream.
And, you know, interestingly, it's Amazon this time. It's not Netflix. I mean, previously, you know, all of Star Trek has been on Netflix over here in the UK for a while. Discovery went to Netflix. This is kind of Amazon's chance to take a slice of that pie. I mean, Amazon, for all that they've been doing, they are sort of... They're not Netflix yet, if you know what I mean. But this certainly seems to be maybe a big part of their kind of stepping up their game one way or another, saying, look, we've got a real big hitter here.
And, I mean, and clearly, you know, Netflix... for Star Trek for Netflix, it's been reported, is a massive, massive hit, and it's a big money driver for them. So for them to have lost out, God knows, one, how much money Amazon paid or overpaid for it, you know, obviously that will have contributed significantly to the season two renewal. But the reality of it is that really, I mean, you really see, look, there's Hugh. You really see a step up this time, and this is very mainstream. There's a lot of money around here being thrown at the promotion of this, and it's just wonderful to see Star Trek get its due like this.
Well, we know Jeff Bezos, who runs Amazon, is a big Star Trek fan, right? Because he had a cameo, I think, in Star Trek Beyond. So who knows? Maybe we'll see him cropping up in Star Trek Picard as well.
Totally, right? I mean, when you're one of the world's richest people and you're a Trekkie, you better believe if I was in a situation, I would totally buy my own show and buy my way into as many things as possible.
This is your business model for the future, is it, Carl?
I work really hard just to be able to be in Star Trek. So, like, that's really it.
Well, I think it's time for us to go into the theatre and take our seats. But thank you, both of you, for joining me. And we'll be back with a little post-episode one roundup. No spoilers. We've been told no spoilers. But, you know, we'll at least be able to give our impressions of what it's been like seeing this show, which has been very much long awaited. And also seeing it on the big screen, seeing it on this very impressive cinema. It's definitely a step up from me watching Netflix on my iPad at home.
You know? This is where they do, like, all the big Star Wars premieres, you know. Like, this is a big deal. This is a big theater.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, should be exciting. So thank you both for joining me.
Yeah. Hi, guys.
Hello.
We've got Michelle, Evan, and Harry.
Hello.
Yes, yes, get in there. Look, this is for me just I don't know what I'm going to do with this.
That's from Patrick.
Oh, that was Patrick. Yeah. So my suit is taken. That's right.
Yeah, you've got four in your bag.
That's right.
Whenever you're ready, guys.
Okay. I guess, could you all give us as quick or short a synopsis of each of your characters as possible, just for the listeners?
Okay, well, I play Elnor, a young Romulan boy who's an expert in hand-to-hand combat. He's pretty good with a sword as well, and he was raised in an all-female sect of warrior nuns known as the Co-op Milad.
There we go.
Totally
kick-ass. I play Rafi. She is a security analyst and a hacking genius. She has a very complicated relationship with the Federation, very strained, and she worked with Picard back in the day after Next Generation, and they had a bit of a falling out. She's haunted by decisions that she's made in the past and has therefore crutches and vices that she leans on to get through the day.
I'm just trying to work out whether I'm allowed to say what I think.
Yeah, I know, right? You could be...
I'm a Romulan from a very, very... wealthy family he's now living on the Borg cube and conducting research, and all is not what it seems. I'll leave it there.
That's good.
I'm curious, particularly the two of you playing Romulans. Star Trek sometimes in the past has been accused of having a kind of monoculture approach to the different species. Now obviously having two very different Romulans in the same show, they're kind of working against that. Were you sort of comparing notes with each other on what it's, you know, what being Romulan means to you, or were you just playing totally your own kind of sound?
I think it was for playing our characters, It wasn't like comparing, like, that'd be like, you know, comparing the two of you together. You may have the same job, but I mean, you lead two totally different lives.
Exactly.
I mean, I think trying to apply normality and reality to a show which is intergalactic and bends time and space is a really important thing to do, because otherwise you kind of lose all anchors. And so, everyone's character, even whatever species they come from or race or whatever, their own lives are their own lives. I think just trying to, you know, try and get the reality under what their world is, even though it's in a very elaborately creative universe, I suppose.
And just how nerve-wracking was it sort of coming into it, knowing it's such a big deal?
Well, I mean, even just what they were saying, you know, you, once we're there, we're still artists, you know, trying to tell an authentic story. So, you know, we didn't get the really nerve-wracking part until you start going to, like, Comic-Cons. You're like, oh, my gosh.
Yeah, now I'm
We're in Star Trek. Did you know that? We're doing Star Trek. So, while doing it, we're just, you know, you're gifted with amazing writing and, you know, great directors and phenomenal actors to work with. And that's what you really sort of get into, and you wanted to do the best you can. And then you sort of, you know, step back, and everybody else is like, you're on Star Trek.
Yeah, there was a couple of moments where during the shooting that you would, you know, the minibus would take you from trailers to the studio and you'd just go past 20 aliens in different species and just having a can of Coke or whatever, and, you know, they've got blue horns or whatever. And, and you just kind of, you go, oh, yeah, Star Trek. Right. Yeah, okay, right. But then you go on and you're into your scene and you're just kind of, you know, locked into what you're doing story-wise, really. And, yeah, it is only almost in the aftermath of it seeing the, you know, seeing a poster with Star Trek on, you're like, oh yeah, because I suppose, you know, the other thing is it felt very fresh. It felt like a story that we were, you know, learning about the world and trying to tell the story as well as we could. And you know, and it wasn't all identifiably similar to some of the previous incarnations, so, you know, it did feel fresh whilst we were doing it, I think.
Patrick Stewart was just in here, but as far as I'm concerned, Jean-Luc Picard was just there.
Sure, yeah, certainly. Sure. Absolutely.
Was it working on the show, where does one man end again?
He's certainly a captain, isn't he? He's certainly a leader.
That's
and
exactly
a
right.
gentleman and enthusiastic and loyal and kind and hilarious. And so I suppose some of those qualities are in Jean-Luc Picard, and he played him for 24 episodes for 7 years. So there's definitely a blend. Yeah, but you work with them more.
I would say, as I, you know, when you're on any kind of production, it's, you know, number one basically sets the tone for the entire set, you know, from hair, you know, from wardrobe to craft surfaces to DP to all that stuff. And that man, Patrick Stewart, it's just like Picard, when he walks on set, he is our leader. And he is a fearless leader. He's a brave leader. He's a kind leader. He's a generous one. He is obsessed and focused on ensemble. Once again, meaning every single person, not just the actors.
And playful.
And
as
playful
well.
And self-deprecating and cheeky and sassy and sexy. I'm just going to say
it.
I'm putting it out there. It's you know, they're right there together.
Yeah.
You mentioned number one. I mean, obviously, in Next Gen, number one was Riker. That was one of Picard's kind of major relationships. And your character play a subsequent first officer. Did you get any tips from Jonathan Frakes? Is there a sense of presumably a different relationship to the Picard Riker relationship?
First of all, Jonathan Frakes is phenomenal, and we love him. If he could direct me in every single thing ever, I would be a happy camper. To be on set, being directed by Jonathan Frakes, working with Patrick Stewart is a dream that I think every actor would just die for, pay lots of money for.
Even just listening to the stories, I'd be happy to spend a day with him, just not even contributing to the conversation, just sitting there.
Just sitting there, a little popcorn, just, yes, keep going on. Yeah, no, they, there's a calmness that comes over Patrick when he's there. It's family. It's really, you know, they're just so calm. And like what Evan said, the best part of it was while we're shooting is having Patrick literally saying, Johnny, tell him the story about, you know, and it's pretty good.
Yeah, the love that you see between the old guard or whatever, I don't know what to call them, but they're guys that were in the, you know, the Next Generation, and it's just amazing. And you sort of think, my God, for them to have worked that much together and still have this deep, I suppose it was going to go one way or the other. They're not going to be friends after that long, or they're going to be friends, family,
and, you know, forever.
And in 30 years, that'll be you guys.
Well,
the convention circuit.
Oh, these guys are in my life no matter what, for sure. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I love this group.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, it's very special.
Yeah.
Patrick also told us about the subtext of the new series, you know, the connection to the present. Well, how do you look upon that?
Absolutely. I often say that, you know, life imitates art, art imitates life. For the last 50 years that people have been doing Star Trek, they are fortunate enough to attract really talented writers, producer, directors, actors. And we can't help but be influenced by what's happening in our present day, from paintings to dance to music to acting. So we are absolutely tackling the discord and divisiveness and the discomfort that we all feel in our different countries right now. It's incredible that it's ever present, that it's happening to all of us. And I think that what I love about our writers is that we're not preaching it. There's not going to be like sitting down and you're getting a lesson, but you absolutely are going to feel a mirror as to what's happening. And what's great about our story is that we're seeking a solution. We're trying to inject hope,
optimism,
and that the fact that we can the sanctity and the vulnerability and the, you know, preciousness of life and love and humanity. Mm. So, yeah.
That's all. That's always been Gene Roddenberry's vision. It was always to hold a mirror on our society through every iteration of Star Trek, every period of time. That's what it's always been. And we just continue that legacy.
Yeah.
Do you think that this series can have a sequel as well? Did you sign a contract that you should be available for?
Well, we're there. We are there.
Yeah, for season two.
Yeah. Yeah. Been confirmed.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. So
they got us.
All right.
Mm. I'm not running away.
And so before you each got cast and got involved, what was it about Star Trek that resonated with you personally?
Well, I was a big fan of it. So given the opportunity to work with Jean-Luc Picard or even Sir Patrick Stewart was just a dream come true. So, of course, I'm going to jump at the opportunity. Mm. I mean, he is very much an actor's actor. And
yes,
I've learned so much working with him, actually working with everyone. Mm. But, yeah, it's just been nothing but a delightful experience.
Mm. Yeah. And then once you get into it to, you know, sort of realize, kind of touching what we just talked about, that you're part of a project that really focuses on humanity and humanity stories. I mean, it's crazy for me. I'm a Dick Wolf child. I started as a cop and all that kind of stuff and like procedural things and, you know, I'm very serious and realistic and all that stuff. And I think I thought I was telling those human stories in those kind of projects. Mm-hmm. But what's amazing, and the revelation that I came past, is that sci-fi is really where you tell humanity's stories, where you can sort of, under the umbrella of like, this is science fiction, you can actually tell all the difficult stories that people are afraid of and maybe back off of, and you can do them under this umbrella. So yeah, I'm ecstatic that I get to be a part of that.
Yeah, likewise. I mean, the scope and scale of it creatively and thematically is sort of endless. And that's an amazing thing for a show, for a story to be a part of. And yeah, just totally drawn in by the creative minds behind it and where they were coming from and where they saw it going, really.
With the three of
last
you,
question, please.
Were the three of you encouraged to go back and watch any of the older Star Treks for research, or were you kind of coming to this totally as a new thing in its own right and you kind of don't want to be...
I think bits of both. I think we all took our own paths with that. I think some people watched every single episode twice that ever existed, and some people watched two episodes.
Right.
I'm naming no names. You know, it's. I think it's whatever serves you best, really. And there was definitely a certain amount of knowledge which you had to know for your character, for the world that you were in, the you know, your specific location kind of thing. But apart from that, it was what would make you feel or be better, really. And I think there was definitely different takes on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, what he said, Harry summed it up perfectly. Although I was the one who watched, like,
you were the one who watched the whole lot.
Yeah,
you
watched. So, yeah.
Any particular favourites?
Right now, it's iBorg, only just seeing where the progression of Jonathan Delarco from the start as Hugh the Borg to where Hugh the Borg is now. So I'd have to say that. Or normally Tapestry.
Right.
Anything with Q, really.
Yeah, I was
Encyclopedia, right
there. Yeah, sorry,
literally, that's why I came by my side.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
So, what an experience. I'm here with a group of people who've all experienced the Picard premiere tonight. What were your thoughts? Introduce yourselves and tell me what you made of it.
I'm Carlos Miranda. And
we know you,
great. And I absolutely loved it. I thought it was, there was a little bit of nostalgia, but not too much. It's definitely about pushing forward in the next chapter of Picard's life. But also, like, the state of the galaxy where we're at. It was everything I wanted it to be and more, and I was entertained. I was like, I'm into it 100%, and it looked incredible.
I should have warned you, but by the way, no spoilers or we'll get in serious trouble. So these are spoiler-free responses. Lee, what did you make of it all?
I really enjoyed it. I've been desperate to see into the future of kind of the Star Trek universe since the end of Nemesis, apart from our little kind of experience of it in 2009 with the supernova. So I've been desperate to see like the designs, the elements, the state of play, where characters are all at. And I feel like this is a show that's really going to cater to that. And Carlos said it. It takes a hint of sort of nostalgia and then it goes, but we're going to go run with it. We're going to go do something different. We're going to take what we knew and loved and take something completely different. I'm so excited.
And it does absolutely fill in a lot of those gaps. It does actually answer quite a lot of those questions. It's sort of setting up the new status quo, and the situation for Picard and for the Federation and for all our beloved characters is one that's changed quite significantly, isn't it?
Absolutely. I missed half your question because I'm walking away.
We were being moved out of the way by a very large lorry that is trying to make its way through Leicester Square. Maybe we'll move slightly out of the way so we don't all get trampled by this...
very strange vehicle. Becca, your thoughts?
On your question or the...
on Star Trek Picard,
oh my
you
gosh.
Know.
It was absolutely brilliant. I feel like I've got more questions than I had before from just seeing the trailers. But absolutely brilliant. I'm so thrilled that this is happening.
And you didn't even have a ticket this morning, is that right?
Nope, I was in the pen for the red carpet viewing. I've been here since like 6:45 this morning, and the guy who was doing the presentation for Amazon was picking people out and like asking you questions and doing all sorts of things. He saw Mini Bev and Mini Picard, kind of thought they were cool.
That serious dedication there. I was about to give a. I think it's fair to say it's not a spoiler to say that Bev was not in this episode.
Yeah.
Now you know, and she's been very definite online saying she's not in this series at all. That must have been a disappointment to you, I guess.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was always had that little tiny hope that like it was all just a bit of a ruse and she was going to show up and surprise us all. But you know, she said herself, and she's spoken to me as well, and said, "No, I'm really not in it." Mm. And I'm like, "All right, well, look, I'm going to still hold hope that." Season 2, we see you.
Season 2 is going to be the Crusher story.
Oh gosh, that would be amazing. Wesley and Beverly, come on now.
Well, we've got Will Wheaton back now presenting the after show, right, which is going to be launching next week. So, you know, who knows? He's kind of back
really
in the fold one way or another.
He's got that foot back in the door of Trek, because I know that for him it was a bit of a turbulent time for him being in Trek, and he kind of has a lot of feelings about it, and I'm so glad that he's coming back in. And even if he's not being Wesley, he's still there and a part of it, which I think is amazing.
Absolutely. Thank you.
No problem.
Clara, what were your thoughts on seeing this episode here tonight on the big screen?
So, hang on, is he going to make us move again?
It's another very large vehicle heading our way. We'll just move out of the way. Leicester Square, not normally quite such a vehicular thoroughfare, but tonight there seems to be a lot of large vehicles trying to move through one way or another.
So, I mean, I loved the story and I loved the script. It was very well written. It was better written than I thought it was going to be, actually.
Pulitzer Prize winning showrunner there.
Exactly, yeah. But also, I think one of the things that really... I think the story was really good and really exciting, but I actually found that I was quite distracted by the fact that it was so beautifully filmed. I loved the visuals, the landscape was gorgeous. I don't want to give off any spoilers, but I think it's definitely worth watching on a big screen, on a big television, high definition. It was beautifully filmed. Even just the opening shots were unlike other stuff that I'd seen in TNG.
The vineyard never looked better. Definitely. I mean, I don't know where they filmed it this time. I know previously it was a vineyard in California, I guess, rather than one in France. This one looked like it could have been in France, at least.
Yeah, it actually does. I mean, also very French. And without giving too much away, Picard actually does speak some French.
He does, yeah, interestingly. We get a few lines of French, yeah.
And I think there was also a collegiate feel amongst the, family feel amongst the cast. And that is quite apparent in the episode, that these different people coming together and forming common bonds.
Now, interesting, we were talking about the writing. One of the things that struck me from the Q&A after the show is Michael Chabon said that what got him this gig, basically, was the short track Calypso. You and I recorded our responses to Calypso, I guess it must be a year or so ago now, when that short track first dropped. And for me, we've had 10 short tracks now. That is still the standout one. That is the most brilliantly written, brilliantly conceived, sort of perfect use of that form. So in some ways, it didn't surprise me that that's what got him the gig. But I'm curious whether you think we'll see any of that kind of sensibilities that kind of inform that short trek going into the Picard series one way or another?
I think we already have in the first episode. I think the use of some music that was music that isn't like orchestral music, but music that is actually music with words, you know, music that you'll recognise, that was recorded another time, not for Star Trek. I think also the themes that, you know, you're sort of seeing just initially in the first episode, some of the themes, the sort of loving relationships between the characters. It's not a stiff Star Trek episode, you know, not that Star Trek is stiff, but there can be sort of a formality of Starfleet. There's not a lot of formality there. It's quite a warm, emotional episode, and I think that was something that was apparent in Calypso.
Even Picard, actually, I'd say there's a kind of warmth to him. I mean, this is very much Picard in retirement. He's not the kind of Starfleet grandee. There's a sort of expectation at one point in the episode that he'll play that role. And really, he has moved beyond it. He has sort of turned his back on that. This is kind of Picard, the man, that we're seeing from now on.
Yeah, I mean,
and I don't want to give any spoilers away, but he talks about someone that he was close to in the past, and he talks about him with such warmth and such affection and such love. That was really heartwarming to see. I think it's heartwarming for anyone who's a fan of TNG, because that's how you feel about that character, and it turns out Picard feels the same way. I think he always knew Picard felt that way, but he's showing his emotion much more overtly now that he's not a captain, and I wonder if that's going to continue through the series, or whether he's going to have to like become more formal as he goes on his mission, or as the story goes on. But it was nice to see him expressing emotion. It was nice to see him reaching out to help people, and there is a real point in the first episode that he really tried to help people, and he's still trying to help people outside of Starfleet, you know, even in his old age. And there was a point that was made in the Q&A afterwards that he's actually quite elderly. He's like 92 now, I think. I saw Sir Patrick Stewart sort of smile wryly at that, because he's like, I'm not actually 92 myself. But the idea that we're seeing an elderly man still trying to change things, still trying to be an active part of society, I think it's quite empowering.
And sort of also having to be reminded of the great man that he was in some ways. I mean, he seems like quite a humble man. I mean, I don't think it's spoiling it too much from the advanced publicity that we've had to say that, you know, things have taken a bit of a turn for Jean-Luc Picard one way or another. He's certainly not kind of where we left him. He's in some ways in a slightly darker place. But there is that warmth, there is that kind of glimpse of the old Picard in there, and there are people, without going into too much detail, kind of reminding him, saying, you know, don't forget what you did, don't forget who you were. There are these kind of references back to the past, and in the show generally as well, actually. I mean, I wouldn't say it's an episode that's kind of steeped in nostalgia for Next Gen, but it's absolutely picking up on things here and there. It's kind of assuming a certain familiarity with Next Gen, and there were some surprising references, I thought, to specific characters that, you know, that we haven't seen so far on screen in Picard, but that were not major Next Gen characters, but ones that kind of played into the story one way or another, which kind of makes me think it is going to be picking up on threads and kind of teasing them out and seeing where they take the story going forward.
Yeah, and I think this series really is about history, so not just Star Trek history and TNG history and our history with the show and the franchise, but history itself and history being repeated. And there was one moment in the episode, which I won't ruin, but they referenced a very big historical event, our history, real history, not Star Trek history, and they referenced that, and it's quite...
I think we can talk about that, since, you know, you and I have an interest in Star Trek and history. There's a discussion about Dunkirk, and the revelation, now this, I suppose, is technically a spoiler, but it's such a minor aspect of it, that Picard in his retirement has, unlike Geordi, who wrote these slightly kind of disappointing novels, Picard has gone and started writing history books, and he's been writing a history book about Dunkirk by the sounds of it. And I think that is fascinating to kind of bring that in, especially as we know one of the big appeals for Patrick Stewart of doing this show was the kind of Brexit landscape and that kind of relationship between Britain and the EU. Obviously Picard is in France, but we know he's sort of an Englishman at the same time, and to be referencing Dunkirk and that kind of moment in the Second World War seems quite pointed somehow one way or another.
Yeah, and the idea, I mean the person he's talking to about Dunkirk doesn't know Dunkirk and doesn't remember, and I think, you know, he's sort of talking about history and how history isn't that easy to forget if you've been affected by it. That's quite a pointed, I think, reference to make, really. And also the idea that history repeats itself. If we don't learn from the past, then we're bound to make the same mistakes again in the future. It's a real sort of, history's a real theme in the show.
Or if you've lived through it as well. I mean, I was struck kind of watching it, you know, Picard in his 90s. I spend a lot of time interviewing people in their 90s who've lived through history, lived through the Second World War, for example. This is Picard sort of talking about the experiences that we've seen, because we've watched Next Generation, but to a younger generation who aren't even familiar with them themselves.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I thought that the way they played him as a much older Picard, he's definitely a much older Picard. This is not the same Picard that we saw in Next Generation, much less, I mean, even Nemesis. I think they did that extremely well. And when they were talking at the end of the fact that, like, what other show, what other character in this day and age, who's that, he's supposed to be 92 in the show, and they talk about it's the love for this character, for being, you know, and Alex Kurtzman was saying, no other show could you have the protagonist be a 92-year-old retired admiral. I think that it's a very different Picard. He's in a very different stage in his life, and I think he's I'm interested to kind of go on this journey with him. And we also saw him like physically weak, which is the first time that I think we've ever seen
weaker Picard. Than Patrick Stewart, I think. I mean, he's sort of playing up the aging aspect of it.
I think so. I mean, Stewart is what, 79? So he's definitely playing up the, but like this idea of like a tired Picard who, yes, he has gravitas because of the history and who he is, but he is not physically the same man that we saw the last time, you know, the last time that we saw him. And I think that it's a more quiet, introverted Picard as well, one that is very much the weight of history and his past mistakes are on his shoulders. And so I'm interested to see where they go with this.
He's absolutely someone who, I mean, whether we say he's haunted by his past, I think that's an element, but in another way, he's kind of surrounded by his past. There are these kind of echoes of it, you know, in relation to, well, certainly Data. I think it's fair for us to talk about Data to some extent. Everyone knows Data's going to be in this show, and Data is certainly something that's very much on Picard's mind. Also, the Romulan supernova, one way or another, there are reminders of that, and people who are kind of, you know, refugees, one way or another, who owe their lives, I suppose, to Picard and to his actions, which obviously we've not seen on screen, but we kind of are aware that this has happened sort of in the gap. So he's someone who's kind of living with his own history, one way or another.
It's funny because the show didn't feel like a nostalgia play to me. Yes, there's references that I won't go into. There are references, and this is very much Star Trek and very much in the Star Trek universe. But it is all about charging forward. So even though this is the history of Star Trek and the history of his life, but what's interesting, it's mostly history that we haven't seen yet, right? It's history post-Nemesis to Picard. So even though it's history to him it seems like a lot of baggage, we have yet to kind of experience all of that with him. So I think that I'm interested. The show is going to be interesting from the point of view of what this adventure is that they allude to and that we know they're going, right? But at the same time as well, like, what happened in those 20 years? What are the mistakes that they refer about? What is, you know, why does the history weigh on him?
And there's a weird kind of sense, I suppose, for those of us who were Star Trek fans in the 90s, you know, obviously the last time we saw these characters was in Nemesis. Now we've had Star Trek since then. You know, we've had Enterprise, we've had the Kelvin movies, we've had Discovery as well, but all of those have been prequels. This is the first time going forward, and it's the first time sort of catching up with our own lives in some way. I mean, Patrick Stewart mentioned in the Q&A that he actually was at on the stage of the same cinema for the premiere of Star Trek Generations. Now, I wasn't there then, sadly, but I was actually seeing it probably only a couple of weeks later at a cinema in Leicester Square, at the Empire Leicester Square, literally about 20 yards from where we're standing. And I still remember that incredible experience of going to see Star Trek at the cinema for the first time, you know, as a young person, and the kind of excitement of that. We've kind of not left Star Trek behind, but left those characters. We've got on with our own lives, they've got on with their own lives, and now we're sort of catching up with them. You know, first of all, Picard, but also some of these other characters that we're going to see along the way. There's something kind of very nostalgic, but also there's a fascination with that, I suppose, one way or another.
Yeah, no, completely. I think what's interesting about this show is that, yes, it pushes forward, but they'll have the ability, all of it will be new to us, they will have an ability to discuss their own history and immediate history, which hasn't been revealed to us. So in addition to, again, going on this journey, I think that they'll have a lot of fodder, and it's the first time, I mean, Lee was just saying how excited he was about, again, as what you've just said, that this is the first time that Star Trek really is charting to the future.
New territory, genuinely new territory in that sense.
We're on the cusp of the 25th century, and this is not the same world. It's not the same Picard. It's not the same Federation. There is something, you know, quite sinister and a lot, you know that a lot has changed.
And they're also kind of the elder generation now. I mean, our generation really is the age that should be manning the starships. You know, these are the stories of the generation that we grew up with, in a sense. There's a weird sense, I mean, you know, who has kind of taken their place? And maybe we'll see some of that in the show, because there are a lot of, you know, quite young cast members one way or another. But absolutely, it's that sort of, it did kind of strike me seeing him up there on screen, particularly because Picard, as you say, is older than Patrick Stewart. You know, he is a very elderly man in this series. And a lot of it is probably about kind of his age and his mortality and the kind of fact that he is towards the end of that road one way or another. And how do we kind of experience that as fans who grew up with this man as someone, you know, sort of father figure one way or another?
I think one of the most popular Next Generation episodes is The Inner Light. Yeah. That way that plays with the old age, life lived, you know, things in between. I think it'll be interesting to see if that kind of echoes that kind of model of, you know, I'm excited to see that kind of what is a Picard, you know, when it's, you know, it's always the classic, it's an easy to be a saint in paradise. I think that could have been applied to every character in the Next Generation for 7 years, very few episodes otherwise. And I think we'll get to maybe see what Deep Space Nine was really good at, of kind of fleshing out that Federation isn't always on the right side, things are a bit more grey. and how do those characters that we consider as saints kind of fit into that model? It's going to be really exciting.
Now, you were working the white carpet. I was going to say the red carpet. It was a white carpet this evening, Lee. What was that like? Did you get any good interviews with any of the stars of the show?
Jeri Ryan, a bunch of the new cast, Michael Chabon, Kristen Bayer, quite a lot of them. So it was really exciting. I mean, it's... you have to pinch yourself. Like, I put up a wee tweet where it's like, you know, probably seems to you, when you were younger as a startup fan, it wasn't cool, it wasn't trendy, you know, you felt isolated from it being a thing in America. And then here we are, me and you are at a premiere. Could you have imagined that when you were younger? Could you imagine, like, you would get a chance to interview them at a red carpet event, not like a convention, but like on a red carpet event, you're sitting watching.
In the heart of London. In
the heart of London, Leicester Square, where they would have big Star Wars premieres. James Bond's been through here, and Star Trek's kind of there. It's just kind of mind blowing that we're here and we're, you know, we've grown up and we've now get these opportunities through, you know, that our fandom has kind of taken us to this point.
Certainly it's been a fantastic evening and a fantastic opportunity to see this show and see it on the big screen. But for everyone else, there's only about a week or so to go until everyone can experience this show. And I don't know about you guys, but I am certainly looking forward to see what happens in episode 2 and 3 and 4 and beyond.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm here for this, and I can't wait for the fact that we're getting a second season. Originally, I remember there was talk that this was only going to be a one season thing, that it was going to be very much, and now the fact that this is going to be potentially a second, and then you could imagine a third, and God knows, you know, maybe even more. So this is, yeah, we're living in the next golden era of Star Trek, and it's incredible.
Fantastic. Well, thank you all for joining me.
Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you all?
Wonderful. How good. Are you?
Really good.
Good.
Ask away.
Again, code for you, for the listeners, just a very quick description of who you are in the show.
I play Dodge, and she's a really cool young woman, very, very wonderfully empathetic and caring for other people and trying to understand other people. She is starting a new chapter in her life, and everything seems to be going pretty great until a horrible, tragic incident occurs, and she suddenly has no idea who she can trust and does not trust herself, is questioning her identity, and goes to Picard.
I play Hugh, a character I created in Next Generation. A Borg drone that was disconnected from the collective as a young man. And now he's a man. It's a very important job.
When we left Hugh in Next Gen, he was the leader of this kind of group of sort of renegade Borg. I get the impression when he's coming back now, he's almost a kind of revolutionary figure, possibly. He's involved in some kind of movement, right? I'm curious, because I heard you speaking at Destination Star Trek a couple of years ago about your own political beliefs, and you were sort of banging the drum for Beto O'Rourke then.
Yes.
Is the political side of that storyline a big part of what appealed to you about the character? Bringing Hugh back. For the
I think I knew one of the original people working on it is someone who knows me and my work very deeply, and I there's so much about Hugh now that reflects my own life.
Right.
So in a strange way, when I first played him in my 20s, I was playing someone else that I had inspired it, and this time around I'm fully using my own life. So there is he's had to make some difficult choices in the world we're in. Mm-hmm. He is doing the best he can under the circumstances to keep his people safe and alive. But with that comes some really hard compromises for him that are eat at him, you know. And I think it's he's in a really rough position in his life right now to balance out how to do the most good at the worst time. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I feel that way myself.
He was a real sort of innocent before.
He was.
In the 90s.
Yes.
Now I guess he's grown up.
Oh, very much.
He's had experiences that must have changed him.
He's not hardened. Mm-hmm. He has, the vulnerability is very much still there. Mm-hmm. I would say deeper than it used to be, because his awareness has grown as a person. And so I like to think that mine has as well.
Star Trek's always sort of been rooted in that kind of 1960s view of the future. I was wondering how you both think that kind of resonates today.
Go for it. Well, rooted in the view that the future would be...
Yeah.
But- progressive and rosy.
Yeah.
Surprise, it's not. I mean, we all have iPhones and flip phones and all the things that Star Trek brought forth.
Yeah.
And I think in a way the show is much more in keeping with the kind of genres that exist now of film and television, which are exploration of, in a, you know, fictitious way, what we're living through. And I think in that way, this explores that in a more deeper way, you know?
Yeah, I feel like one thing that I've really noticed is, I think in the past of Star Trek and many sci-fi or superhero properties that are always kind of looking at this wonderful leader, someone that is perfect and can lead you into the future, which of course we have a wonderful leader, but what I think is the trend now is we're done seeing that story of the perfect person who can solve everything. We want to see them as people. We want to see them be humans and make mistakes. And I think that is what we are definitely bringing into this show, is we're seeing the almighty Picard, but he's retired and he's unhappy and he's just like any real life story would be. And you're seeing a young woman who should be in a great state in her life, and now she's on the run and she's scared. You're seeing so many conflicting stories, because that is the reality of what we live in. It's not always going to be, here's the perfect person who's going to solve everything. Go. It's complicated.
And but we kind of saw that in the first episode last night. I mean, I know we have to be wary of spoilers, but you know, you have this character who's going to Picard for help, and back in Next Gen days, Picard would have held all this power at his disposal, this authority. Now he's a very old man. Is he going to be able to help you? It feels much less safe somehow. The show feels much less safe.
Definitely. It's rocky. It's gritty. And what I love about that scene specifically is that Daj is going to him for help, but in the end, they're both in need of help. Mm-hmm. He, as much as he's trying to help her, she's giving him a reason to live again. He's just been waiting to die, as he says in the show, and now he has a reason to do something, and so we both help each other in that way.
In that first episode, there is it's a fight scene. I physically winced at some of the stuff that had been done.
Were you the guy that went, oh?
I didn't hear that.
Because I heard that and I cackled.
I loved it. I love that too.
It was actually giving me, it was reminding me of like the Bourne Identity a little bit.
Yeah.
How involved did you get in not actually kicking people's ass, but.
Well, she had some serious bruises.
You should have seen me.
She was bruised
up. I walked into rehearsal and everyone was like, are you
honey,
okay?
Who are you dating?
They looked at my boyfriend and they were like, and I was like, it's not him. It's not him. It's not him. No, but I used to do martial arts when I was a kid. I was that kid who went to school and then immediately went to my dojo and stayed there until it closed, and then did homework at midnight because I just loved doing karate. But I stopped when I was maybe 13. So then when they told me I was going to be doing stunts for this, I got so excited because it was something that I hadn't done in so long, and I remembered I loved, and going back to it felt kind of like coming back to something that felt second nature and it felt in my body. Of course, it was hard. It was hard, and I definitely am not in the shape that I was, but it was really amazing to get to go back to that, and we had an amazing stunt team. And my stunt double, Kira. So I got to do quite a bit, thankfully. I was thankful for that, but I can't quite, you know, flip and, you know,
she can't
jump
upstairs.
She can't
fly.
but Kira can really kick ass at that. So so I got to witness her do some of that badassery as well.
Fantastic. There's obviously a mixture of sort of Star Trek veterans and newcomers to the show. Was it? Did it all kind of gel? Did you feel like part of it comes straight away, coming in with everyone that knows each other for kind of decades?
I think it's interesting going into something that it's not every day that you walk into something that has been so established and is so well known. But it just takes me back to the day that I was on set with Marina Sirtis, Jonathan Frakes, and Patrick, and then Michael Dorn and LeVar Burton came to visit, and I was just sitting in a circle with all of them, and they were just, because they all knew the stories, they were telling me stories of Next Generation, just like yelling stories at me, being like, oh, this asshole did this. And the fact that I just got to witness that and that they were taking me in like that, they were just like, Issa, sit down. Like, oh my God, do you remember that? And it felt like we were all old pals. And I feel like that is kind of the theme of the entire filming experience, was we were all taken in so wholeheartedly, and we have a great family.
Oh yeah. I mean, you know, the Trek actors, we see each other practically every weekend because we're in conventions here or there, and you know, you're some weird hotel in some weird town and you all have to go eat. So yeah. You hang out with each other. It's, you'll see.
You go to Diner 28.
Yeah,
together.
You'll see. It depends on the city, but it's not always a good meal. Yeah. The whole Star Trek family is exactly that. It's like, you know, very interconnected and welcoming. So
have you and the other veterans been preparing the newcomers for how much this is going to take over the rest of their lives?
Pretty much. I told her her life is going to change because it is. Mm. Yeah. Mm. So, but in a great way, you know. Mm. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I say, sort of on that, because you're still sort of quite near the start of your career, were you, I suppose, trepidant about taking on sort of such a big role that might come to define it?
No, because when you haven't done much, you will take any role that is given to you. But I also didn't know what this role was going to be. I was just auditioning and I was told it was Star Trek. I wasn't really told that she was going to be this involved until like the last callback. And it really was a lesson in like, wow, you never know how life is going to turn out and how timing is everything in a way, and everyone has. I always just cite my father. My father is has been in the business a while and been working his ass off for so long, but he finally started getting known at 50 years old, mm-hmm. and then now this is happening for me at 20. So it's kind of a lesson in like anything is possible at any time. It's really just you roll with the punches. You take what comes your way.
She's also an incredibly confident actor and performer, a great singer as well. And so you always seemed incredibly confident to me. This is the day I met you. So I think you were born for this part.
You and Patrick really carried that first episode, I felt. I mean, that must have been a daunting responsibility, not just joining. Because often, I suppose, when you have a Star Trek show, especially if you're one of the younger cast members, they tended to be, you know, the ensign or something.
Right.
Yeah. A smaller role. Yeah. Whereas you're absolutely at the heart of that story. And it's the two of you for most of that episode kind of carrying the story.
I really applaud Alex and Akiva and Michael for taking a chance on someone who they really didn't know how I could deal with all of this or anything. And they just kind of took a chance, and thank God, because I didn't realize just how heavily involved I was going to be. And really it did take me by surprise. The first day I ever worked on set was that scene in the vineyard where I'm crying and bleeding. And I was so nervous and almost felt like, oh my God, I can't do this. But the reason I could get through it was because of Patrick, because he stayed there and just held my hand.
She's
and was looking in my eyes
way.
And just giving me so much. And that's the reason we're all here.
Yeah, he is that guy. I mean, honestly, he's that kind of actor.
And you must have had that when you were in your early 20s and, you know, playing Q.
You know, Patrick, sorry for the sound effect. Patrick and Whoopi were both, you know, mom and dad on that set on Next Gen. And they just could not have been lovelier, kinder, more gracious, more like you do your like. Just, and Patrick is that in spades today, you know. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we're very lucky. We have a great captain. That's by the way.
Thank you very much, guys.
Thank you guys.
You so much.
Thank you.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, guys.
Howdy.
I just want to introduce you, Alex Kurtzman, Akiva Goldsman, Kirsten Beyer, and Michael Kuba. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Howdy.
Well, I'll just start then. What was it about Picard, especially as a character, that you decided you had more to say about that character and wanted to bring him back?
Well, I think that obviously
Jean-Luc Picard is iconic, not just in the world of Star Trek, but in a weird way, Next Gen has its own fan base. It's sort of deeper even than the broad Star Trek base. And the center of that is clearly Jean-Luc Picard. So if one is revisiting Star Trek, one is likely to have a fantasy about it. In truth, what happened was it was little more than a fantasy. We were chatting about actually making one of the short treks and pitching that maybe a young man could be revealed at the end to be a young Picard. So we were talking about him for one scene, and at which point a quality that in Alex that Michael characterizes triggered, which is...
Why stop there? I mean, it was really... Alex has that make things more possible, make things bigger, make things... Let's reach farther than anybody here is talking about reaching. Why should we limit ourselves to putting... to going to all the trouble of approaching Patrick Stewart to get him to be in one scene when maybe if we go to the trouble of approaching him, he might be in a whole... series.
And so
we don't know.
Yeah. And we started courting him, and over time we're successful wooers with the belief that as much as we desperately wanted to see his return, so too would those like us who were viewers.
Thank you for talking him round on behalf of fans. It's been a big job, but we managed that. Michael, you wrote a very moving article about how your father's death kind of tied into working on Picard. I felt seeing Patrick Stewart up on the screen, and particularly he's playing an older man than he is in real life, but seeing him as this very elderly character, for me as someone who grew up with Picard in Next Gen, that was quite moving for me, and you know, quite in some ways a difficult experience. Even. Mm-hmm. Was it quite hard for you writing this very elderly, very, you know, quite sort of frail Picard who's to some degree kind of focused on his mortality in a way that he wasn't before?
I think it came naturally. It came naturally with the age of our actor and with the age of our character. It would almost have been wrong if that wasn't in, to some degree. And the question of to what degree was always a question that we were in discussions with Patrick about. And where's the line between having him seem too enfeebled and too old and almost that therefore kind of rules him out for having any kind of adventures whatsoever. But at the beginning of the week, we had the premiere in Los Angeles, and I was with our director, our wonderful director for the first three episodes, Hanley Culpepper, and we were sitting doing an interview together, and she was saying to the interviewer that her father was coming to the premiere, and that he was a big Star Trek fan, and she was so excited to get to show him what you know, we'd done, and I have to admit, I had a real pang at that moment. Mm. Sort of wishing I could have had that same moment.
Yeah.
Between the four of you, you've contributed to Star Trek films, novels, and television. I was wondering what you think.
And comics.
And I was wondering what you sort of thought the strengths were of Star Trek, sort of in each medium and across mediums.
It's interesting, this word franchise, right? Because it feels like a very, Michael used an excellent word the other day, a very mercantile term, where it's about like, okay, we can sell this and we can sell that. But I actually don't think that's what it's about for any of us. I think that's someone else's job. Our job is to create great stories and figure out how to use all these different mediums to tell them in interesting ways. Mm-hmm. So the graphic novel is its own art form, as is the novel, as is the screenplay, as is the movie, right? So looking at all of those things and saying, okay, how do we use this unique opportunity? What can we do in this medium that we can't do in that medium? And then how is it all still Star Trek? And that's the beauty of getting to do this in a group, because there's a wonderful system of checks and balances there. And you know, the amazing artists that we get to work with in the graphic novels are one kind of artist. And then the amazing artists that we get to work on in the shows are a whole other kind of artist. And I think it just allows us to stretch our muscles, flex mm-hmm. our muscles mm-hmm. in interesting ways.
And as you go, you also realize there are certain kinds of stories that lend themselves more than others mm-hmm. to specific kinds of mediums, you know, mm-hmm. small moments that want to be kind of expanded in the visual way and in the comics, being able to cover more time in a novel versus the mm-hmm. television or screenplay format. Mm-hmm.
What do you think it was in the end that persuaded Sir Patrick? He told us about the 35-page... Mm-hmm. What do you think it was about the story in the end?
I think he believed ultimately that we wanted what he wanted, which was to tell the story of a man at a very different phase of his life. That thing that you found disconcerting was also the magnet that drew all of us to come back to Jean-Luc Picard on the bridge of the Enterprise next alphabet in line was not interesting. It was more the material of, it should be relegated now to the material of fantasy and imagination because it is past. And where does that lead someone as life starts to approach its end? That's the kind of story that you don't typically get to tell in television or movies. And I think he wanted to. And I think finally he realized that we weren't kidding when we said we do too, that that is equally important to us. So I think it was just like-mindedness in terms of sensibility. And then we're a pretty good, all of us, including Patrick, are a pretty good playpen full of folks. We have a nice time together trying to make a thing. And I think that helps. So it's just a lot of good luck, mostly.
The last time we saw Picard was in the film Nemesis, which obviously was quite divisive, I think, for a lot of fans. I'm curious, particularly for you, Kirsten, as someone who's worked in the novels, and the novels have done a lot to kind of, you know, take on after the various shows have ended and kind of work out how do we, you know, and sometimes adjust things slightly. I'm kind of curious, as much as this show is its own thing, is there an element of kind of trying to course correct that moment where, you know, the fans were slightly riven by it and find a way of kind of picking up that story 20 years on and bringing everyone back in?
So it's not the motivation, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes in the wider universe, the books, the novels, things like that, stories exist just for that purpose, to retcon something, to sort of take something that we were uncomfortable with and maybe try to fix it. But in this case, it's all driven from the character of Picard and those things that resonate. Mm-hmm. For fans who might have been disappointed to see Data pass in Nemesis.
Or the way that he
passed, not feeling sufficiently glorious or grandiose or whatever. Had there been absolutely no emotional resonance for Patrick or for the rest of us, that wouldn't have been a thread that we would have picked up. Mm-hmm. It just so happened that particularly for Patrick, that was something that was still quite meaningful to him. And so you begin to mine for those elements. Mm-hmm. It's not the other way around.
Mm-hmm. For Star Trek fans, the original series and the Next Generation, I guess the Federation was like a utopia, an idealistic. And in this, the vinyl picking up is almost like a paranoid political thriller, which does seem to be turning what people initially loved about the show on its head, which can be fantastic. It's one of the reasons why I loved, for example, The Last Jedi. It took something that people loved and turned it inside out. Now, people might not love that. Are you prepared for fans to maybe not feel super positive about the Federation being the bad guy?
Well, I don't think that's accurate. I think it, to the extent that it might have been reported as such, or the fears of fans who are worried that it might be that, have sort of almost imagined that that must be the case. Mm-hmm. I think the Federation, in spite of the fact that Picard says that it was no longer the Federation, I think he means something very specific by that. And what has gone wrong with the Federation is exactly the same thing as what has gone wrong with Picard, in that they both made promises that terrible circumstances, almost impossible circumstances, forced them to break. And that's a situation that any of us could find ourselves in at any time. And what do you do when you have made a solemn promise, in this case, to help someone in every way you possibly can, and then something happens that you feel, rightly or wrongly, makes it impossible for you to keep that promise? It's a tragic thing. It's a painful thing. It is something that a governmental entity like the Federation is bound to encounter many times in the course of its history, those kinds of moments. The United States certainly has. And Picard has too. And that will come, Picard will come to reckon with the effects of his having failed to keep the promise that he made over the course of the season.
I would also like to add that you guys are in a weird spot, right? Because it's like witnessing, it's like watching the first act of a movie, mm-hmm. you know? And so we have this tradition of assessing objects as if we've seen the whole thing. What we get to do is to give you a 10-hour narrative, mm-hmm. right? And remember, this is serialized. This is not, and now Edith Keeler's dead 1 week, but we're fine the next week. Mm-hmm. This is knock on from episode to episode, both in terms of character and story. So in the first act of anything, things are bad. Mm-hmm. Always remember that, right? There is no redemption without adversity. And part of the complications of this world are the complications we're allowed to create, which nobody wants. DS9 a little bit in that serialized, some of Discovery. There are times where we've had the opportunity to tell longer form stories. It's not common in Star Trek. So both good guys and bad guys less surely live up to those labels.
Is it kind of
sorry, harder? Sorry, we're just going to have one really quick final question.
I was just going to say, is it kind of part of the job these days with social media and so on to steel yourself against, there's always going to be someone who's really unhappy. And I'm thinking particularly for you, Alex, I mean, Rick Berman had this in the 90s, as the kind of figurehead, you get all the flack thrown at you. Is that just something that is part of the job, or does it kind of get to you, or do you know what I mean? Do you have to kind of steel yourself to accept that and not let it push you in a different direction from where you want to go?
I think I learned from making the first film mm-hmm. that the voices of the fans are essential to being a writer on Star Trek and to processing and metabolizing the information that they're giving you is critical. Mm-hmm. It's often uncomfortable, but I think the price of that is worth it because at the end of the day, the fans have kept this show alive for 54 years. Mm-hmm. It doesn't really belong to anyone except for the fans mm-hmm. and Roddenberry. And of course, it's hard sometimes, but I also think that in equal measure, there's so much love for it and so much joy and so much thank you for doing this. And, you know, I guess the best way that I can put it is I will get letters from people or people come up to me and they will say, it literally saved my life. Mm-hmm. This thing that you did saved my life. I was alone. I didn't have anybody. I happened to turn on the TV on the one night that I was thinking of killing myself mm-hmm. and it saved my life. And when you know that that's also happening, then any flack you get over pre-decided ideas about what it is before people have often even seen the thing mm-hmm. is really irrelevant because in the legacy of the show, which goes so far beyond me, mm-hmm. I'm just a piece of it along the way. But in the legacy of this show has changed, shaped, not only altered people's lives for the better, but it's changed history. I've met astronauts who became astronauts because they loved Star Trek, and artists and scientists and writers. And this is so much bigger than any one of us. It's so much bigger. So I think we all feel that our job is to protect it to the best of our ability and to allow it to be sophisticated in a way that some other franchises can't always achieve. You know, you look at Star Trek and you look to it for sophisticated, thorough, interesting, complicated thinking. You know, it's just as much a philosophical show as it is an action space opera, you know, and that's just the price of admission. You know, taking that flak is the price of admission. I wish everybody loved me all the time, but I also wish I could fly, and neither of those things are ever going to happen.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That's good. Thanks,
guys. Well, it's been so amazing hearing from so many people involved in Picard and hearing the reactions of Duncan and his guests to the first episode of Picard, but that isn't the only thing we've been talking about here on the network. Here's what you might have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, The Ready Room.
Did I ever tell you the story about how
Channel 4 in Oklahoma City played Next Generation at 10:30 because that's when they had played the original series reruns the last time they had a shot at it.
Yeah.
And you think that's insane, but their thinking was, are you kidding? Do you know what kind of ratings we get with Star Trek at 10:30 on Sunday night after the local news? We'd never get those kind of ratings with anything else. And I'm like, but you would get even bigger ratings if you put it at a normal time. And so they finally, going into fourth season, they had a big like, okay, fine. But Best of Both Worlds Part 2, of all the times to change the airtime and then not tell? They didn't promote it?
To the journey!
Another interesting statistic on this, while we're talking about it, is that past a certain point in human history, I forget the exact number, but I read an article on it, but past a certain point, anyone who is alive at that point is statistically likely to be an ancestor of everyone alive today.
Well, that just sort of broke my brain. Can you...
I know, it's weird to think about that. If you go far back in time enough in human history, at a certain, it's like a crossover point almost, where anyone alive at that point, and prior to that point, is likely to be an ancestor of every living human today.
Gosh, that's an amazing stat.
Statistically.
Yeah, that's an amazing stat.
The Edge, a Star Trek Discovery podcast.
You're not going to get in Discovery, or at least I hope they don't, things like references to Grand Magus Ron. That's nothing in comparison, do you know? Like,
oh, I can do you one better. Grand Magus Brunt.
Ugh, Brunt. F-C-A.
Jeffrey Combs, I love you.
Can we please have Jeffrey Combs in Discovery?
Earl Grey.
How are we bettering ourselves? And the way that it seems to be is through high culture.
Well, I think it also ties into this kind of utopianism of Next Gen. I mean, Next Gen is the most, I mean, people say Star Trek is utopian, and I would broadly agree with that. But Next Gen is absolutely the most utopian.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or the desktop Apple Podcasts app to get the latest episodes as they are published. And please leave us a star rating and written review. That helps others to find the show.
If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, YouTube, and most third-party apps, and you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link.
Be sure to check out our Picard coverage throughout the week. Commentary will be available as tracks on the line, feedback will be discussed on postcards on the line, and you can catch the full analysis right here on our main show. You'll find all of these in the main feed for the line and the Trek FM master feed.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on Picard, and there are many ways for you to do that. The best place to join in the larger conversation is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook, where Christopher D. Littlefield will collect your feedback for postcards on the line. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it should come right up. You can also find the network on Twitter and Instagram at TrekFM, and on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. So, Chrissy, where can people contact you when you're not wanting to read these books that Picard is writing in the future?
I'm so excited that he's becoming an historian in his later years. It's perfect for him.
I know. And listeners, like, if you've listened this far and somehow, like, you didn't catch that and the stuff that was going on, just go back and re-listen.
Or apparently we'll find out in the first episode, so that'll be good.
Yeah.
In addition to Here on the Line, of course, people can find me in the Babel Conference and on Twitter at The Goddess Livia. That's TheGoddessLivia. You can also follow my work as an historian by liking the Facebook page my fellow historian partner and I run, History with the Zilagis. That's spelled Zilagyis. And that's where we post about our historical research, including my blog and short podcast, Ancient Aliens is BS, where I go episode by episode debunking the History Channel series. And Justin, where can people contact you when you are not, like all of us, eagerly awaiting 6 days from now being able to watch this show?
I know. And when this thing comes out, it'll be more like 4 or 5, depending on when it drops. I mean, it's so close. And I've heard lots of people who are at the premiere who can't really, you know, give us reviews or spoilers or anything, but but they've all pretty much said that it's really great. So I'm just so excited about it. So when I'm not doing that, you can find me co-hosting Earl Grey. That's our dedicated Star Trek The Next Generation podcast. I do that with my friends Joe Keegan and Amy Nelson every week. It'll be interesting to see if there'll be things from Picard that we can bring into that show when we talk TNG topics. Yeah. We have a lot of fun doing that every week. You can also find me on Twitter. I'm at TrekFan4747, where I tweet about nothing but Star Trek. And you can find me hanging around the Babel Conference on Facebook. If you'd like to help us keep all our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and more, available through our special patrons website, The Patron Zone. It requires a great deal of money to produce, host, and distribute these shows each month. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm.
We'd like to take this opportunity to recognize our current associate producer, Norman Lau. Thank you for supporting Trek FM and especially The Line. And I think we can say a congratulations to him because he's going to be on Mission Log now.
I was going to say, yeah, congratulations, Norman Lau, for being a co-host on Mission Log. That is huge. And thank you again for your support of Trek FM, especially The Line. Yeah. And listeners, at the $25 a month or more level, you can become an associate producer like Norman as well. So please head over and do that, patreon.com/trekfm. So join us next time for another episode of The Line.
Happy birthday, Brandon.
Patrick Stewart returning as Jean-Luc Picard was only impossible until it's not. On January 23rd or 24th, depending on where you are, it's really going to happen.